Welcome to the program. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Talk Radio 790 KBC, coming to you live from Barbados in the Caribbean. That's right. The show is on the road, and I'm finally a little more well rested. If that's English, I'm caught up on some sleep. I'm enjoying the sun, the water. The water is warmer in the ocean than it is in the pool. If you can just picture that. I'm here. My parents are here. My dad, what is he, 77? And he was never much of a swimmer. And I can't get him out of the water. He is swimming up and down the beach and just having the time of his life. This water is unbelievable. It really is. Also, had Thanksgiving here, my favorite holiday. I want to know what, you know, it'd be interesting to hear what everybody else's experience is going to be because it's 11 o'clock here. So my day is over. And yours may still be going full force at this hour. Hopefully I'm not interrupting your meal. And if I am, well, it's a good interruption because you probably need a break from your insipid relatives who are, it's interesting. The CNN, I was watching CNN earlier today, and I had some guy talking on there about how, you know, Americans have probably this Thanksgiving are not talking about politics because it's so divisive. I mean, nobody wants to start this conflict. Nobody wants to talk about politics. And I'm listening to this and I think that's not what's going to happen. This is not who we are. And certainly not the people that listen to this show. I mean, you're gonna go, you know, and if you've got, you know, crazy Uncle Bob, who voted for Jill Stein, you're gonna let him have it. You might even provoke him a little bit, get him foaming from the mouth. So I'm pretty certain that once the dust settles on the holiday and people wake up the next morning, we're gonna hear more and more stories of food fights, and fisticuffs at family gatherings, over nothing other than politics. One interesting vignette, that politics came up only once today for me, and it didn't even happen to me. It happened to my wife. She's had to leave a lunch early to, I don't know, go somewhere, and so she gets into the shuttle that takes you from one part of the hotel to another, and she gets into the shuttle, and in with her come some British people. I'm a little British family, but they're older, and the kids are grown, and they sit down. Where are you from? They ask her, and she says, "Well, I'm from California, from the United States." And do you know the next thing that they ask her is, "Did you vote for Trump?" And her answer, of course, it was pretty direct, and she goes, "Well, as a matter of fact, I did." And these English people go, "Fantastic. So now you get to ask us." And Sherry looks at them kind of confused and like, what the hell am I supposed to ask you? And they go, "You need to ask us. Did we vote for Brexit?" And Sherry goes, "Did you vote for Brexit?" And they said, "Yes, of course we did." And the next 10 minutes of the ride was all kumbaya and lands of fairies and elves. As they talked, so it's interesting. Not everyone, as I always say, not everyone abroad and in Europe is looking down their noses at us. But nonetheless, that's as political as it got, and I doubt that that's the experience of most people who went to Thanksgiving this year. One thing I am almost certain of, and maybe this happened to you, is that this piece that came out, this bit of news, and CNN's really pushing it. The story broke about Jill Stein. You remember she's the Green Party candidate. I don't know how many votes. She got some negligible percentage of the popular vote. Obviously didn't win any states. And now she's back in the news. And she's pushing this idea that there was a significant voter hack. Have you read about this? CNN, this guy at CNN, Tom Foreman's pushing it. And you know what they cite as evidence? This is what's so funny about it. Because I had my parents ask me, you know, well, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, will this challenge that Jill Stein is pushing and others in the Democratic Party are getting behind, will this prevent Donald Trump from becoming president? I mean, is this something that could could throw a wrench into the whole operation. And, you know, and so you have to kind of take back, you got to peel back the layers a little bit to answer the question. Because at first blush, CNN's presenting this, by the way, as being based on some sort of factual data, some kind of, you know, real hardcore evidence that they have. And I'll tell you what that hardcore evidence is. In fact, at one point, the guy who's talking about the story, it's Tom Foreman, right? He says, well, the idea is, the reason that we need to really examine this is when you look at these Rust Belt states, and they're talking about Pennsylvania and Michigan specifically, that it is highly alarming that Clinton received fewer votes than she should have. Now, I'm going to let that sink in for a second. That's the evidence. The evidence that something is amiss is saying these states have electronic voting. Now, this is not internet voting. I want to make this clear. Electronic voting, and we have it in California. When you go into the polling place, there's a machine that has circuitry. Okay, it's on a network. There's circuitry, but there's certain safeguards in it. It depends on the state. Different states have different safeguards. And without getting too deep into it, California is considered by the experts to be one of the safer ones. And still, you might have thought, you know, when you went to vote and you went to vote electronically, you might have been concerned. You know, I was. I know I went in and I voted electronically, but in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, who's gonna monkey with this? You know, I mean, anything digital, anywhere, the minute something is hooked into a network, it can be cracked. But it's electronic voting where you still go to a voting place. It's not online voting, and that's what they had in Pennsylvania, and it's what they had in Michigan. Now I'll remind you too, right? So the evidence that is being cited is that Clinton just didn't perform as well in the election as they expected, and there's electronic voting. So it must therefore be that this voting is suspect. Now, you know, the others are calling this, of course, I think very accurately, conspiracy theorists for disgruntled Democrats. I mean, nobody likes losing. And hope, by the way, what are the stages of grief, right? Isn't denial one of them? So clearly there are people who are in denial. And Stein, I think, is exploiting the situation because she's fundraising now. She's already raised millions of dollars. I think as of tonight, she's raised something like $3 or $4 million. Which is not an insignificant sum of money. And so she's, you know, and she's getting her name out there. And of course, overturning these results, if it were to even happen, is in no way benefits her. So she's really a spoil sport that's come along and is trying to, you know, wear the mantra or the mantle, excuse me, of looking out for these elections and making sure that we have integrity in our elections. Which of course is a fair request, but here's what's interesting. The people that are involved. There's two people that CNN cited, and one of them is John Bonifaz. He's the guy who's helping Stein with this. There are two people who kind of are considered to be experts in the field. Now, what are his credentials? He's a Democratic Party activist. Do you know this is the guy that sued George? Do you know this guy sued George W. Bush over the Iraq invasion? And then sued again to try to have him impeached. He's a lawyer and definitely kind of a left-wing nut. Okay, so you got this guy. And then he's paired himself with a more interesting person. And his name is Alex Halderman. And he's with the University of Michigan. And he's this guru in electronic voting systems and electronic voting fraud and other IT-related related fields. One of his most interesting pursuits. This guy, this Halderman guy, he was the one who, when the District of Columbia, right, Washington, D.C., wanted to go to internet voting. Remember I said there was a difference between internet voting and electronic voting. Okay, electronic voting, you go to the polling place, there's a machine, it's electronic. Internet voting, and you've heard a lot of people on the left touting this. You know, it's always from the left, by the way, if you look back at it, it's, and it, the idea that you could vote from the comfort of your own home. You could go online, you log in with certain credentials, and you're in, and you're able to cast a vote from your couch. And again, I mean, the theory, the push behind it is enfranchisement. More people will vote. Get as many people as possible to go out and vote. And look, it's no secret, I'm not a huge advocate of it, because I think if you're too lazy to get off your couch and go to a polling place, I don't want you voting. I mean, that's it. I think there should be some barrier of entry. And that barrier of entry is you get your A money down to the polling station and vote. But nonetheless, electronic voting versus online voting. So DC wanted to do the online voting thing, right? Because they're very progressive and we're looking to get as many people to go out and vote. And well, here's what he found out. So he does, they basically, the voting people in DC create the network and they create the system. They build it. And instead of, and this is wise, I'll tell you, once in a while politicians do something that makes sense. Instead of just deploying it, building it and deploying it, you know, kind of like the Obamacare website, instead of doing that, no, I don't know if it cost $1 billion. I have no idea what this cost. I don't. But anyway, what happened was, is this guy goes and they asked this guy, this Halderman guy, to attack it. Do you know how long it took them to get in? I mean, do you know, this is crazy. It only took them, I think, like 30 minutes. Within 30 minutes, this Halderman guy and some of his PhD students, so these aren't people even with PhDs, these are just his, you know, his teaching assistants, they were able to get in there within 30 minutes and take full control of the server. They could change votes. They could turn the server on and off. And even, guess what? They even took control of the cameras that were watching the server. Because, of course, these goobers over there in D.C., they set up these, you know, they had, and the best part is he was able to show screenshots of what the security for the server looked like. Because remember, there's two parts to IT security. One is the software, the network security, and then you've got to actually keep your server physically safe, as in guarding it. You know, all top servers are always guarded because you can actually physically hack into it by getting into the room and plugging your computer into that instead of getting through a firewall online. So there it is. And it showed like one sleepy security guard sitting in a chair, you know, just kind of dozing off. So basically, and this guy's thesis was, do not go online voting. Do not do it. We're not ready for it. The internet has to be, and computer systems have to be far more sophisticated. And this is the guy right now, okay? This is the guy, this Halderman guy, is getting together with this Boniface guy and being cited by CNN as one of the people that said, you know, I mean, it really, we really need to take a look at it. But he's not saying there's clear signs of fraud. He's not saying that there's anything that he sees as suspicious. He just says, now's the time to look at it. And there was an interesting quote. This is interesting because I think it was Snowden who chimed in on this. And one of the things that he said is hacking voting machines, not that difficult, but in hiding a secret deviation in votes from after the fact statistical analysis, nearly impossible. So if you go in and you were to hack the system with some kind of an algorithm, you know, some kind of an equation that was going to go around and change votes, well, you really can't hide that, because whatever that algorithm is, it's a pattern. It creates a pattern, kind of like, I don't know, like a modus operandi. You got a burglar and he's got a certain way of robbing a house. He does it over and over again. That's the same thing. There's a certain pattern that will be found. And whatever pattern is created by a machine, another machine can replicate it. And so he says it's nearly impossible to determine that. So what does all this mean? Look, we know that in Pennsylvania, what did he, do you know, remember Bush versus Gore in Florida? Remember that? In 2000, you know, Bush won Florida by a whisker, gave him the presidency. Stolen election, everyone cried. You know, Trump won Pennsylvania by 12,000% more votes than Bush won Florida in the year 2000. Think about that. And that in a state where we know our own, one of our own people here on our team, on the Sam Nation team, grandma went to vote in Pennsylvania, pressed Trump, and it changed it to Clinton. Three times she had to get help. So this, let me tell you, folks, this is a whole lot of hot air. I hope you had a good time arguing about it with your relatives at the dinner table tonight, but it's not going anywhere. Trump's going to be president come January 20th, and it's all going to get wrapped up with a big bow on it. All right, when we come back, you know, do you even know the real story of Thanksgiving? What happened? Because the whole thing with the Indians is BS, okay? I'm going to tell you what it is. When we come back, Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC.
This is Sweet James Bergener. I listen to Sam Nation.
And welcome back to the program. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. And we are live from Barbados. The show is on the road through the end of the week, I'll tell you more about here in a minute and fill you in. Hope you're having a great Thanksgiving. I had a terrific one here. It's one of my favorite holidays, and I think what really irks me about Thanksgiving is how wrong the story is that we are all told. Right? You remember? Yeah, I remember in elementary school, you learned about the Indians, the Pilgrims, how the Pilgrims had their first big harvest, how they could not have done it without the Indians, and in gratitude, they set a feast and invited the Indians and had them over and fed them a lot of food. Now, this myth is not just perpetuated by your first grade teacher. It's, I mean, you go, yeah, I looked up in Time magazine. You know what Time, they talk about it. It was a great harvest. They harvested their first crops. This is the Plymouth Colony in 1621. About 140 people gathered, and they also say here that the English probably ate off tables while the native people dined on the ground. So I don't know what that means, but it doesn't sound very hospitable to me. But whatever, that's the story. It's the official story, and it is dead wrong. First of all, when they say they had their first crops in the autumn of 1621, that is kind of nonsense. They might have had some crops, but they hardly had enough to survive. In fact, the crazy thing is at the beginning, in the beginning of the Plymouth Colony, they practiced a form of socialism. I don't know if you knew this, but the Pilgrims came over, and part of their religion was collectivism. They believed that a godly thing was to practice the law of consecration, which means, well, I'll tell you, this is, by the way, a great historical account of this was written by Governor Bradford, William Bradford, who was the governor of Plymouth Colony, and he kept a very detailed journal. And in this journal, it was later turned into a book that he wrote, The History of Plymouth Plantation. And he talks about how this whole thing worked. And, that the law required that all profits and benefits, this is a quote from his book, all profits and benefits that are got by trade, that come from trade, traffic, trucking, working, fishing, or any other means, were to be placed in the common stock of the colony. Okay, so there's like a central warehouse, you know. So if you made a shirt or produced some crop, you had to bring it to the warehouse. Only keep what you needed, right? Only keep what you needed, and turn the rest over for the common good. Well, you can imagine how that went. Crop was so bad, 1620, 1621, 1622, that by 1623 they'd had enough of it. They said, look, I mean, by the way, people were sneaking in to the storehouse and stealing stuff, right? These were good Christian people, right? We think of Pilgrims. Yeah, I mean, they were stealing stuff because they were going hungry. And nobody wanted to work hard, because for every person that worked hard, there were a bunch of others that were mooching off the system. So what happened was, as Governor Bradford said, enough of this. We're not doing it. We're just, man's fallible, and we just got to live with it. Man's only going to work hard if it's to help him and his family. And so what did they do? They took all the land, and they divided it up and gave each family a plot of land to do with it as they saw fit. And lo and behold, and this is a great argument to give all your socialist, left-wing nutter friends who want to tax everybody to death. Lo and behold, as people began to be able to keep what they produced more of it. In fact, they produced so much of it that there was a surplus. And now they could trade among each other. So the guy that, you know, raised cattle could trade with the guy who grew corn and could trade a cow for a bunch of flour or whatever have you, right? And then from this somehow there was an autumn feast, and this is where Thanksgiving came from. Now, it wasn't called Thanksgiving until, I think, much later. And in 1863, Abraham Lincoln turned it into a national holiday by declaration. And so since then, we celebrate it regularly, and we get the time off, and it's a big, big national holiday. But that's the story. It's really a triumph against socialism. You know, who knows? This country could have been one giant communist commune, except they thought of it really quickly that maybe this system doesn't work. And as soon as they tried capitalism, voila, everyone was fine again. All right, I'll give you some insights here into Barbados when we come back. It's a pretty interesting place. Back after this, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. There's an estimate that about 3 million illegal immigrants voted in this election. Wrap your heads around that. And welcome back to the program. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC, coming to you live from Barbados. It's late at night here, so Thanksgiving is over. One more little tidbit to add to the story of Thanksgiving, right? Because it's been just completely changed around by, crazy liberals who've wanted to turn it into this great multicultural holiday. But really, you know, the interesting thing is even before the Plymouth Colony went kaput because of their failed experiment with socialism, you know, the same thing happened in Jamestown. In 1607, they were also socialists. And there, just like in Plymouth, every shipload that came in, only about half would survive. That's crazy. 50% would just die within the first year. And around 1609, 1610, I mean, they actually called it in the history books the starving time. All right? And the population, imagine this. The population there went from 500 down to 60 in just 3 years. 500 to 60. And so here, you know, they did that. They had a commune. Everybody pitched in and put in their efforts. Practice communism, you know, the thing that you learn about when you go to UCLA. And they talk to you about the great wonders of what it would be like if we only all just got along and weren't greedy and fought our you know, natural instincts. The utopia that we could create. But you know, the most interesting thing from the Jamestown diaries, because they had people who wrote diaries and tracked this kind of thing, tracked what was going on. There are a number of reports that claim that only one-fifth of the people did all the work, and that the remaining four-fifths, right, 80% of the people in the Jamestown colony were total parasites. That colony kind of reminds you of Mitt Romney's little talk, you know, the 49%. Remember that? You just write off these 49. They're the ones living off the government. They're never going to vote for anyone on the right because they just, you know, they're just moochers. So that Mitt Romney, by the way, is back. That's right. He's got some kind of a strange pulse. And I bet you, you know, one of the things you might have talked about today at the dining room table, or might be talking about later tonight still, is Mitt and the whole sweepstakes, the cabinet sweepstakes. We haven't really gotten into it, have we? Today, some news broke where Kellyanne Conway, I think, is tipping her hat a little bit to this outcry about Romney. I think from a lot of Trump loyalists, they're feeling like Romney's not the guy. And I don't like Romney for Secretary of State any way, shape, or form. I think that's the most critical position there is in the Trump White House, because a cornerstone of the Trump doctrine is going to, you know, yeah, his presidency is going to be formed and shaped largely by what he does with foreign policy. And Trump's always made this big point about making smart deals and being aggressive and this and that. Romney's not the guy. And more than that, I mean, I can never forgive him his horrible speech that he laid on Trump. I just can't. And speaking of socialism in the Plymouth colony, you know, the worst thing any Republican and so-called conservative can say is to point at somebody and say, hey, you inherited your wealth, you don't deserve your money, you're not anything. You know, because I think the cornerstone of our free world, dating back to the Pilgrims, right, dating back to those changes that Governor Bradford made in Plymouth, where he decided that every family, instead of being one giant commune, was going to have the land divided, every family was going to get their plot of land. And from that, a tremendous success was created, and Thanksgiving was born, right? That's as American as apple pie. And there's no difference between that plot of land being earned by you, right? You worked for it, or your father or grandfather working for it and you having inherited it. Private property is private property. And I will never, ever forgive Romney for that ridiculous speech that he gave in Provo or wherever it was in Utah, where he denounced Trump. I forget his feelings about Trump. It has nothing to do with that. It's that call out that Trump inherited his wealth. He didn't earn it. And that is a direct quote. Terrible. Shameful. I want him nowhere near this White House, I'll tell you that. Get him out of there. Get somebody different. All right. Back after this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
This is Sweet James Bergener. I listen to Sam Nation.
Sam Rogowski here. According to the New York Post, he may have left his heart in San Francisco, but Tony Bennett owes his life to Miss Piggy. That's right. The legendary swine puppet, as the New York Post nicely calls her, shed her diva-like image and sprang into action when the 90-year-old Queens native and national treasure nearly took a spill on a float at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Yes, that is real news. Apparently, Tony Bennett was saved by Miss Piggy. Now, this is the real Miss Piggy, not the contestant on Miss Universe. And I'll tell you, you know, you take a fall, and it can hurt. And, if Miss Piggy isn't there to save you, that's true. Any slip and fall case, you gotta call Sweet James. He may not actually be there able to save you and catch you, but he will take care of your case if you have one. So talk to him, call him, discuss, figure it out. Don't talk to the insurance company. Don't go to them and try to figure it out on your own. Don't do anything but call attorney James Bergener, because he's the guy that can help you. He's the only attorney we trust here on the program, and he will, well, regardless, if it's a slip and fall, dog bite, car accident, maybe you're injured with some product, you know, your Samsung phone blows up in your pocket, whatever it is, give Sweet James a call. 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit sweetjames.com. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC. We're live from Barbados in the Caribbean, and I feel like I need to tell you a little bit about what it's like here. People keep monkeys as pets. No, for reals, they do. Monkeys are kind of like, I don't know. There's no good explanation for it. They're like pests, okay? They're everywhere. And apparently farmers even will be rewarded by the government. If you kill a monkey, you got to cut off its tail, you bring it to the government office, and they'll pay you $75. It's a true story. They do that because apparently these monkeys will go and raid livestock and steal crops and cause all sorts of damage. They used to feed these monkeys at my hotel. Because, you know, guests would love to see the monkeys, and they wanted to see monkeys. And I still haven't seen one. But they stopped the practice because there was a little bit of a problem. No, not that. No, but well, I'll tell you what happened. So apparently, these monkeys are really smart. They'll climb up in the tree, and they attack birds' nests. They love to eat little birds. And so, but here's how they do it. They go up in the tree, they get close to the bird's nest, and then they shake the branch, and they shake it so vigorously that the little, you know, hatchling will come fall out of the tree, down on the ground, and then they go down on the ground and they scoop it up and eat it. Well, what happened was is the monkeys were up in the tree, shaking the tree right outside the lobby here in the hotel. And they shook the tree so hard, and a little baby bird fell out of it. Well, some really nice lady, probably from California, is out there, and she just, oh, this little bird, oh, this poor little bird. And she goes and grabs the bird, okay? But the monkey wants the bird, okay? So the monkey is all eyes for the bird. The woman has the bird, and the monkey goes full, like, aggressive stance, like, wants to attack the woman to take the bird. And so the hotel workers run up, and they're like, "What, lady, drop the bird." And the woman wouldn't drop the bird because, you know, she's a bleeding heart, you know, loves animals, and was not about to give this bird up so it could get eaten. So she's holding the bird, you know, like right next to her heart. The monkey's about to attack her. She begins to retreat. Every time she takes two steps back, the monkey takes two steps forward. And apparently it took 5 or 6 people to intervene to finally get her to drop the bird and run, because these monkeys can really attack you and harm you. So there it is. Don't ever get between a monkey and its prey. That's not a good idea. Apparently Daniel, my son, he saw a monkey earlier today. He went to play some golf, here and saw a monkey in a tree, and it was eating a banana, which I feel is a little too stereotypical. But at any rate, beautiful country, beautiful ocean. It's the only place I've ever been where the water in the ocean is warmer than the water in the pool. And that is the God's honest truth. So we come back, a couple last little tidbits I think are important about what's been going on. Oh, and speaking of internet security, I want to talk about this big thing. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC. You know, the New York Times has almost had to apologize to its readers more often than Bill has apologized to Hillary and crawled back to the marital abode. I think they've lost credibility permanently. And welcome back, Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC, celebrating Thanksgiving in Barbados. That's right, live from Barbados. In the middle of the Caribbean, well, actually, in the southern part of the Caribbean, but still surrounded by water, beautiful blue-green water. I love it here, and I'm not sure I want to come back. So, but always, whenever I have to go somewhere, I always bring the show with me because, it's that important to me. I never want to miss out on the opportunity to talk to you. So, I enjoy this. Well, what can I tell you? Remember those voting machines I was talking about earlier? You know, there's this concern right now, which I think is bogus, about these elections somehow being rigged in key Rust Belt states. And one of the things that's being talked about are these electronic voting machines. And we talked about it. So if we missed that segment, get the podcast. It's an interesting discussion. But one of the things that I think this ties into is just the stunning lack of privacy that we have online. You know, they just voted for a new law over in England, in Great Britain, that your entire internet history can be viewable by the tax authorities, different government bodies, okay, the police. This is insane. You actually know, it's called the Investigatory Powers Bill. It's been all but passed into law this week, and it requires internet providers to keep a full list of your internet connection records. They're called ICRs, for a full year. That means every website that you have visited, everything that you've clicked on, you know, maybe that some of that little more objectionable material, the government not only sees all of it, but records a full year of your activities online. And you know, and it's not for terrorism. I mean, it's everyone, every person, every taxpayer, every private individual, and the police, the military, the Secret Service, they all can log into that without any warrants. And it's crazy. They've talked about doing that here too. And I'm a huge privacy, you know, I'm big into this. This is so important. We cannot give this up. We cannot give it up. Thank goodness for our Constitution, and hopefully, you know, hopefully the new Supreme Court will not erode these liberties, although I have my concerns. All right, we'll be back here tomorrow night for our last installment of our program from Barbados, and then I'll be back in studio next week. Looking forward to it. Have a great rest of your Thanksgiving. Enjoy, don't eat too much, and don't fight with your relatives more than you were planning to already. All right. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC.